You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
What are attorneys notorious for? Defending, right? The one I have tonight, she doesn't just defend. Eva Goremusandu defines. From village classrooms in Zimbabwe to boardrooms across South Africa, Eva's path has been a masterclass in taking the rules everyone else follows and rewriting them for impact. She is the director of EMG Attorneys, an admitted attorney in two jurisdictions, a governance whisperer for companies that can't afford to get it wrong, a speaker, a mentor, and a mother who somehow turns 24 hours into 36. She needs to teach us how she does that. She's argued in court, audited the ethics of billion rand balance sheets, and still finds time to mentor the next girl who thinks the law is a locked door. Tonight, she's here to show us that purpose is not a position. It's how you use every credential you earn to elevate the people coming behind you. So buckle up, because what you're about to hear isn't just an interview. It's a live demonstration of how to wield education, resilience, and audacity like tools of national building. Eva, I'm so happy to have you on the show. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you today?
I'm well, thank
you. Your line is a bit shaky. We can hear you and then we don't. So if you can just find a nice spot for us so we don't lose everything you have to share with us tonight, I'd be very glad.
All right.
Are we good? Let's test it out.
Hello?
Fantastic. I hope it holds. Let's start all the way back. Paint us the opening scene. What did home look like for young Eva? And how did the environment script your earliest ideas of justice or ambition?
Okay. So I had a very supportive family. Grew up with my mom, my dad.
Yeah.
They actually all were at home. My dad worked from home. My mom was a teacher, but she became a housewife. So they were really involved when it came to careers. Also, you know how teachers are when it comes to academics.
Yes, yes.
So she was quite hard, but I appreciate it all because she taught us to take responsibility.
Yeah.
My dad always taught me from a young age to take responsibility of my own life and to make a plan. So that's what taught me to be a problem solver and that's what got me into the law side.
Love it. I believe you once said your first courtroom was your family dinner table. What debates or dynamics there shaped your worldview?
I guess always just fighting. Well, not necessarily fighting.
but having a good argument.
It was actually when I was probably really small. I hated injections.
Oh.
So when I was sick or something as a small child, I would be fighting.
Yeah.
With them about why I shouldn't get an injection. Mm. So basically it was that. And I remember just realizing, one, I didn't like maths.
Okay.
So I had to look up, okay, but I like arguing. And at that point I was like, and I like stories.
Yes. Yeah,
so this has to be the right avenue for me. Mm. And I mean, at first it started off like that. But then as I continued studying, I realized this is my calling.
And at what point did you realize that this is your calling? Was it a childhood calling? Was it something of a more of a pragmatic choice or just destiny that stalked you until you surrendered?
So I liked helping people.
Okay.
And when I saw people coming to me with their problems, and it was problems that I could solve.
Even as a kid?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I was a problem solver.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. It might not necessarily be legal, but I was always entrepreneurial, right? So it would be something like maybe people didn't do their homework or something. We were supposed to bring a newspaper.
Yeah.
Right? Not a newspaper, a magazine page to school. And then I would have brought the whole magazine. And then I find a way to sell it.
No! You're going to make kids work for their homework.
I'm in grade one. I'm like, I can give you a page. So it was always that, like, where there's a problem or something, and people would be like, do you have a solution? And yeah. I had a solution. But that was because I had a father where he would be like, come up with a solution yourself to my sister and I. So we had to think from a young age.
Yeah. And yeah, look at so you now.
Over.
Yeah, look at you now. It's put you in good stead.
It definitely has. I'm grateful.
Yeah. And you at know the what?
Time, no.
Continue. At the time?
At the time, it didn't seem like it. Oh, of course. Sometimes it seems like our parents are hard.
Yes.
But I guess as you grow older and you look back and you look at the person you are and how people ask you, how do you resolve problems?
You trace it back to that moment when you were left. Exactly. What feels like what neglect, right? Like, oh, I'm being neglected.
Yeah, why is this person leaving me? One time I missed an exam. Mm. I wasn't woken up by my parents. And my dad literally said, you need to take responsibility for your own life.
Dad, come on.
Imagine. And he forgot to wake me up, by the way. But, I mean, those things teach you to make a plan. Because I had to make a plan to go write my exam.
For sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we start talking law and governance, it can really sound sterile to outsiders, right? But I want to hear from you. What's the most human, high-stakes moment you witnessed where good governance literally saved a business or a community?
I would say in a business, maybe when business relationships don't work out, right? And you somewhat have to be that person who guides.
Yeah.
Because you're basically the sounding board for governance as the company secretary. So in that instance, you see that people have put their heart and sweat into a business. Mm-hmm. And then finding a way that they can just break away from each other.
Yeah.
That's always a difficult part because it's like a person's baby. A person's business is a person's baby.
Mm-hmm.
So just that part of finding a way that these people can still have peace, can still go their separate ways, that's always hard. It's always hard.
Yeah.
So it's about being a human in the same breath and understanding that each of them are still human.
Mm.
Like when we see business people, they're still human. And I think that's taught me that. We're dealing with people at the end of the day.
Yeah, 100%. And I got ahead of myself there. I really just wanted to ask about your law journey, right? Your journey through varsity, whether you've worked in corporate or not. Before we even get to EMG, let's talk about the road to being an admitted attorney.
That one is it was a good road.
Yeah.
I can't say it was a difficult one, but varsity requires just a lot of dedication.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of distractions. When you're now in varsity, you have all this freedom, but understanding law is about reading.
Oh, right. A lot of reading.
Yes, it's a lot of reading and also making friends because you have 100 cases to get through.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have the right friends, people that are as focused as you, you can actually be like, oh, you summarize this, you do this, and then I'll do that. And we come together and we do study groups. So I had very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
I had very good people throughout my law degree. And I mean, I was working part-time. I was doing the promotions. I'd be, I was doing everything I can to also make money on the side.
Yeah.
But I had support in terms of friends.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then after graduating, what did that look like? Where did your journey take you?
I took a gap year.
Oh, tell us more. Tell us more.
I took a gap year. So I decided to just, because I was very young. I mean, I finished varsity. I started varsity when I was 17. 16, okay. Going with 17.
Yeah, that is quite young.
So, yeah. So at that time, my parents just said, you know what? You're very young. I was 20. So take a gap year.
Yeah.
Come back when you're focused. So obviously I was still working part-time. And then when I came back, I decided I wanted to do law school, wanted to go to law school. And from there, I was very focused. I did some pageants in between, won some money. And I said, okay, I'm done with this. Okay. I need to focus.
Okay, two questions. The first one will be on the difference between, because when you're saying law school, it sounds like it's something different to going to university to study, I guess, a BA or an LLB. I don't know how you went about it. So what is the difference there?
Okay, so BA is obviously you first get the BA degree.
Yes, yes.
And then from there, you then do the LLB.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. LLB is
so
law
then
school.
That's 6 years.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's about 6 years. And then with an LLB, it's 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's recommended that people first have an undergrad, be it a BCom, and then you do the LLB. Because they feel that people are not ready for law when they just do an LLB.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It is like that in practice.
Okay. Pageant era. Which pageant system were you in? You can't just mosey past that one. We have to know the details.
Miss Mamelodi Sundowns.
Yeah.
Okay. I was in Cape Town. Yeah. So
and how far did you go?
Second princess.
Oh, come through. What did that journey teach you? Because it looks different, right? But I think because you are the common facts, exactly. Because you are the common facts, so there are just some things that are unmissable or will be constant. So what is the a lot that journey taught you?
About giving. Because the Motsepe Foundation was about women empowerment.
Mm.
So I got empowered through that journey. I mean, Patrice Motsepe was a lawyer himself.
Mm-hmm.
So being a part of that, it actually motivated me more to come back into law and push.
Yeah.
Because it's just about empowering other women. And I was around other women who were pushing their goals as well. So more than anything, it was about giving back. So that taught me a lot about community involvement, how important it is to give back, regardless of how high up you get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And then you get done with school. What happens? Do you get into corporate? What did that look like for you?
So I did my articles. I had a really nice experience. Yeah. I'm so grateful. A lot of people complain about articles.
This is
true. I had a great principal. And from there, I still went into another law firm. And at some point, I went into corporate.
Mm-hmm.
I went into insurance. I worked in insurance as a legal advisor for about 2 months,
yeah.
And then I was promoted into manager. I got an offer and another job.
Okay.
To manage what I was doing for those 2 months.
Yeah.
People that were doing what I was doing for those 2 months. So it was actually a friend who recommended me for that.
Mm.
And from there, I remember in the management position, my bosses were like, wouldn't you ever consider opening a firm? Basically, it wouldn't have been for me alone, but it would be with me and somebody else. And I thought to myself, why, if somebody else sees potential in me, why am I not seeing it myself and starting something else for me?
And it's also so interesting who it comes from, right? These are people that are benefiting from your talent, but they're saying,
exactly.
Yo, you're playing small.
Yeah, but they wanted me to obviously create one that would probably
of
benefit
course.
Them.
Of course.
Not
of
necessarily
course.
For myself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then that journey, how do you then start? How do you then decide, let me do this thing?
So I was in between starting a firm and getting a job offer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I had to pray and ask God which avenue to take. And then from there, I realized I've always been an entrepreneur.
You
from the
have
time
been.
I was filling magazines,
yes.
primary school magazine pages,
yes.
making a plan. And I decided to just go for it. Mm. I was still working. So I started the practice. And then at some point, after a few months, things got busy. I got so much support from so many people. Like, people would just be referring, people were excited. Mm. And that's how we started.
You know, as I'm hearing your story from when you were a kid to varsity to work, it all sounds so beautiful. Like, does this girl ever lose at anything? So it's gotten me so curious. Give us the plot twist. That plot twist moment where a decision that almost derailed you, where you know you were just like, had I not done this or had I not missed, you know, what is that plot twist moment for you? Is there one?
It's very difficult because even when you face those hurdles, because they come.
Yeah.
For me, I'm so positive. I never become a product of my environment or my situation.
That's so good.
I always tell myself to rise above it. And always my dad taught me, make a plan.
Yeah.
So if something goes wrong, make a plan.
Mm.
Because you're not a tree, you can move. So if it's a bad situation, you can move. If something goes wrong, you can move around it.
How do you balance that optimism and that positivity with actually just taking the moment in for what it is and feeling the disappointment and the sadness or the hurt or whatever negative. And I don't want to say negative because I don't believe they're negative emotions, but whatever unpleasant emotion, because it feels unpleasant in the moment that you are going through. How do you balance the two?
So at first you have to accept that this is the situation. And it's not to say that I don't accept.
Yeah.
I do accept that this has gone wrong. This didn't go the way that I wanted it to go. But at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, am I going to cry about it, or am I going to find a way to navigate?
Yeah.
Right. So at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, I'll give an example. Maybe I remember during my master's, I got an oral exam. So I am somebody who has never failed, right, an exam.
Of course.
But this is an oral.
Well, we've gathered that much from this conversation.
And it was an easy exam,
okay,
which everybody else passed.
Okay.
Right? So I get that, and it's an oral exam. And the ones which were difficult, I passed all of them.
Okay.
So in that moment, my question was, do I want to sit here and wallow that this happened, or do I want to navigate, rise above it, and keep pushing?
So you botched the oral exam?
No, I passed the oral exam.
Okay.
I passed the oral exam. But I mean, it's just a situation where it's something that's never happened, but you have to work around it and tell yourself, yes, what went wrong?
Yeah.
And how do I rectify it?
Yeah.
So we always face hurdles in life, either personal, academic, whatever it may be, but you always have to tell yourself that I have these goals. Am I going to allow this situation to cripple me?
Yeah.
Or am I going to find a way forward?
Oh, that's so potent. In starting your own legal firm, what is the thing you wish somebody would have told you and you were just never prepared for when it happened?
You can't do everything yourself.
Oh.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah. I mean, I told myself I was superwoman in the beginning, and you easily burn out.
Yeah.
So I think it's important from the beginning to learn that you're not an IT person.
Yeah.
You're not some of these things you have to accept that there's a reason why there's different people that do different things.
Yeah.
So that was important from somebody who's used to figuring things out and trying to do everything on their own.
Mm.
You can't do everything yourself.
What was your first hire? Or who was your first hire?
Tandy.
Okay.
Really good. Yeah, so she was really good. She was I'm so grateful to anybody who I've had. Like she's a good support system. She was quite entrepreneurial herself, so she was such a great motivator.
Yeah. And what position did she fill?
She was a consultant.
Ah, okay.
She was a consultant for me.
Interesting. So let's get into the work you actually do, right? This winning in boardrooms, winning in courtrooms. I'm very curious about it. I know that you advise C-suites on risk, right? What blind spot do leaders overlook most, and how do you make them listen?
The people problem. Sometimes you don't value your people, and that's your great asset.
Ooh. And what does it look like? What does it look like when an organization doesn't value its people? First, like, paint the picture of what happens in the organization and what the people are then feeling.
High turnover, lots of corner talks.
Mm.
So you don't want that.
Yeah.
So many times what you want to do is keep your greatest asset happy, which are your people. Because if your people are happy, your clients are happy.
Yeah.
And your people also promote your business.
Mm. And you know what I know about organizations is that until it hits them where it hurts, they don't get the picture. So how do you pitch it to them in a way that matters to them?
Well, as a company secretary, you have to be hard.
Mm.
And by virtue of your position, you have no choice but to advise them when you can see that governance is not being followed, because you are responsible for ensuring that there's ethical leadership, right? So that includes how they conduct themselves and also peer review. That's one thing that I encourage in businesses where other directors are evaluating other directors.
Mm.
And also having your subordinates evaluate you as well. That's important.
Yeah.
Because then you have feedback.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Now, I want you to describe the feeling the first time Eva, the partner, walked into a male-dominated boardroom. How did you decide to show up?
I showed up as me, unafraid. But obviously you're nervous before because, I mean, as a young person, usually the first thing that people say is you are young. And you're sitting here. I remember one of the biggest boardrooms I sat in, everybody was above 45, I can say. And I was 30, you know, at the time. So you step in, you look like a child, and they are wondering what can this child tell us? And then when they hear you speak, they actually stop and listen. So I think a lot of the time you're afraid, but you have to rise above that fear and tell yourself that this is me. I have worked hard to get here, and it's just people. The worst they can do is say no to your idea, but you would have expressed what's right, and you would have guided them in the best way that you can.
You know, Eva, I think it's, and I don't say this in any bad way, right? I think it's easy for you to say this because you've got a track record, and it's always nice when there's evidence to prove who I am. I am the girl that I think that I am. But I'm just thinking about somebody who can't show up confidently, who fears even raising their voice, and is thinking about all these great things that they can do, but something in them is just like, And maybe it's because they don't have the track record. They don't have the evidence for themselves to prove that they can show up confidently and do the work. What do you have to say to somebody at home who's in that position where I want to believe, trust me, I want to believe, but I don't know how because nothing around me shows me how?
One, surround yourself with the right people. And by that, ask yourself where you want to be. Right? If you say, I want to be an entrepreneur, look for entrepreneurial events. They are free events. Go there, show up, be around those people. They're most probably positive. Positive about their businesses. There's no one more positive than someone with a startup, right?
We think we can conquer the world.
Yes, you think you can conquer the world. So think about where you want to be and find out how you can be around those people. If you're telling yourself, I want to be a lawyer, go on LinkedIn, look for a lawyer and say, hi, I appreciate what you're doing. Is there any way that I can connect with you in some way? So be around such positive people and people who are where you want to be.
That is so beautiful. Now I want to know what failure or near miss taught you a legal lesson you could never learn in any statute book.
Oh, okay, that's also easy.
Ha! Everything is easy for you.
No, also I did have exams post my master's, which there was this particular subject, which is called applied governance, which I probably failed about two times, right? But each time I failed, right, it helped me when I started my practice because what happened is I had clients that were coming and saying, there's no one who can solve this problem. And in each of my exams, all of those problems popped up. And it was the ones I failed. And we went back to look at the memo. And then I knew how to solve it. Yeah. So at that point, I became the fixer because nobody else could fix the problem.
Okay,
But because
Olivia
I encountered
Pope. Okay, Olivia Pope, come through, Gladiator.
So I appreciated those failures because it really helped me in terms of solving a problem that a lot of people can't solve.
You know what you're saying really solidifies an idea that I've heard quite a number of times around failure, that there are just some things that failure can teach you that success cannot. And I think this is hard for overachievers like us who have never really had prior brushes with failure. And when we come across it, it's like, oh my God, what's going on? But there are just some things that failure can, you can only learn through failure. Never through success, never through achieving and coming up top, but just being there in the bottom, in the pits.
Exactly. There's a purpose in every situation, every failure, every setback. There's a lesson. We just have to be patient for it because
Oh,
sometimes
child.
you become frustrated with yourself and you label yourself as a failure when you should label it as a lesson.
But now I'm thinking it's a very basic thought, but it's sending me down a rabbit hole. You know, in school, you've got those kids who are year after year, you just know that they're not going to make it. And they keep failing and failing. And I'm just wondering the wealth of knowledge or wisdom that sits in those kids or in those people because of all the failure that they have endured. And I'm just wondering how they could turn that into treasure.
That's a very interesting thought. But I think sometimes it's a matter of cultivating whatever issue that could be, because it might not necessarily be that they have all this knowledge, and maybe it's an application issue, because a lot of us have a wealth of knowledge, but we don't know how to apply it.
Oh, girl, say that again.
Yeah. Ooh. Even in business, a lot of us could be entrepreneurs, start other businesses, but we don't know how to apply it. And that starts off as a young age,
You know, yeah, I think I'm guilty of that. I know so much. I have taken so many courses. I've been with so many coaches. Uh-huh. And I'm just like,
what do I do?
It's not even how do I do it, right? I think my problem is, why is it not working the first time? Because it's the right thing.
Yeah.
And it's worked for the people who taught me. Mm-hmm. Why is it not working? I'm just like, nope, next coach.
And you know what I've learned?
Yeah. Yeah.
Authenticity.
Oh.
Because sometimes if you're not real about something, or for you, it's not authentic. Mm. It's just something because you're smart, you can do it.
Yeah.
That's the difference between the people who succeed, because there's that authenticity. Mm. So you have to choose or pick or follow something which you know that there is authenticity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes it's easy for us to just say, oh, I'm just going to do this because I'm good at it and because I know it. But is there authenticity?
Mm.
And people can sense that.
Yeah, this is true. I was about to say that also the people who are your supposed clients or customers, they can tell that, this is a script, this one. Or this is somebody else's regurgitated knowledge and not necessarily what is authentic to this person.
Exactly.
Sure. Exactly. Let's talk money.
Authenticity is key.
How comfortable are you talking money?
Oh, very.
All right, let's go. What is your aha money moment, the day you realized intellect alone wouldn't help build wealth for you?
I don't know if it was an aha moment,
mm-hmm.
but because I was always that entrepreneurial person at a young age, I mean, I've got a sister who's 4 years older than me. She would borrow money from me in primary school and high school because I was just that good with money. Mm. So I guess in the entrepreneurial side, how I use it is I always question myself.
Yeah.
Is it necessary?
Yeah.
Is it needed?
Yeah.
What is it going to achieve for the business?
Mm.
What is it going to achieve for me?
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to propel the business forward?
Yeah.
The answer is yes, then invest in that. But if it's not going to, if it's just for aesthetics, don't do it.
Yeah.
Because most times we do things for aesthetics.
Oh, listen.
Versus actually doing things that are going to help us invest in us. Also ask yourself, what is, you need income generating assets.
Yeah.
Right? Is this going to generate any income? No. So some of those things, I guess, for me, one thing my accountant says is that I am stingy.
Because I was about to ask, what does being good with money mean? Because if it means being frugal, I don't know.
Well, it's not really being frugal, but I think you have to see what's important.
Yeah.
I mean, the things you have to spend on. Marketing.
Oh, for sure.
We do a lot of marketing. I have a marketing person. Mm. I don't do it myself because I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
It involves investing on what's necessary and doing what's necessary to propel yourself forward or your business forward. And also live. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Get to enjoy. What's the point of living and you can't enjoy?
Yeah.
But don't live beyond your means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to take you off this money path a bit, because you said you have a marketing person because they're good at it and you're not. What are you good at? What is that Eva signature?
I'm good at problem solving.
Okay.
Yeah. So if someone comes with an issue today, I'm able to, I don't know how it just comes to me, but I'll have a way for them to navigate. Might not even be a legal issue, but it could be a life issue, a business issue, something issue. I'll most of the time have a way forward.
And where do you go when you need problem solved? Because sometimes our own issues can make us so myopic, and you know, our scope can be so limited, because also you're not just thinking about it, you're also feeling it, right? So who do you turn to?
I have a very close friend, Matuto, and also my sister, Michelle. So they are great people to confide in if I have a challenge. And also God, for me.
Yeah.
The first stop for me is God.
Yep.
Right? And yeah, he gives all wisdom. So in every situation, he guides me.
This is so true.
But you need friends. You need people who you know are wise.
Yeah.
So that's very important. Mm. Or I go to somebody who's walked the path that I'm trying to walk on. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I don't have a way forward. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And also in the legal world, it's very supportive.
Mm.
So you can literally be 20 years in the game, post a question to say, I need help here. And you'll find somebody who will guide you and help you.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of 20, name one money habit you tattoo on every 20-year-old's brain if you could.
Invest in property.
Oh.
Yeah, if you can. Invest, start young.
Here's an interesting thing I heard yesterday on the radio. I was listening to a radio show, and they had one of the banks there to really just talk about the property journey, right? And what was discovered is that people in other parts of the world, and I think this is more of the developed countries, right? For them, property is a thing they do when they're 50, when they're 60. But the South African context is different. For us, it's something you have to actively consider and actually do at a very young age.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? And I, as you answer that, tell us why you would advise a 20-year-old to get into property as soon as they can.
One, it's an income-generating asset.
Mm.
Two, property is cheaper in South Africa than most countries.
Mm.
So if you look at Namibia, like a two-bedroom house would be R1 million, whereas it could be 500,000.
Mm.
Right. So that's one thing I would say. If you do start a job, assuming that the 20-year-old has started a job, save up for a deposit for a house if you can.
Hmm.
I know sometimes we need cars to impress others, but a car is not an income-generating asset.
You know, I remember when I started working, I should have listened. Yeah, when I started working, some guy that I went to school would say to me, "Mpumi, I know you want to get a car, because I mean, you have to get from home to here, but just get a house first. Firstly, for affordability, right? Because if you have a car, then your affordability goes down for that house, but just get a house and you don't even have to stay in that house.
Exactly.
Rent the house out." And I was just like, no, I'm getting a car. I'm tired of Ria Vaya. I'm tired of standing at the bus station in the cold. I need a car. And do you know what I got? A car instead of a house. And I only got a house later. But I really, really wish that anyone who's young, 20, just starting out, can really heed to this. It's such a good investment. Yeah. But also, not randomly, right? It has to be at a good place. At a good price. A good place. Yes.
Well, even the places that people don't necessarily consider to be the best, if you're not going to live there for you, if it's not a place and you're seeing it as an investment, you can, right? Because it's all about investing and making sure that it's the right thing. I think young people have a problem of it must show.
Ooh, child.
It must show syndrome. So everybody must see.
Yes.
Working. It must show.
Yeah.
But who are you working for? Oh, working for yourself. Right?
Literally. So who is paying for the house?
It's you.
Oh.
So the car, it must show. I'm working. Yeah. It must show.
Yeah.
And that's, we need to get out of that disease.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I've come to realize? High income hides bad habits.
Yes.
So how do you keep lifestyle creep from hijacking generational wealth? Because what we're talking about, when you start talking about property, when we start talking about really thinking about investing and holding yourself accountable, that's generational wealth. So how do you keep lifestyle creep from hijacking what you know you are building for your future as well as of your children if you intend on having them?
One, I had to learn to stop caring what people think.
Oh, child.
Because a lot of the time, we want things to show, right?
Mm.
That's the main reason why we have this challenge, right? So one, stop caring what people think. Live your life in the best way you can. Please God and make sure you are happy, right? If it means, yes, you're going to buy that expensive car, make sure you can afford your lifestyle, right? But the one thing is, stop caring about what people think. Everybody has their problems. Everybody has their own thing. Yes, you buy that expensive asset and it's nice. Say, hey, Eva, you look good.
Yes.
But after that, you're sitting at home crying. You can't eat properly because you have to scrounge up money to pay for this asset. Right? So at the end of the day, stop caring what people think. Live your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, live for you.
Yeah. Let's talk legacy. If you could rewrite one law or policy to accelerate economic justice for women in particular, what would that law be?
Ooh, that's a very difficult question.
Difficult, you? I cannot imagine it. Yes, there's a lot, right?
You know why? There's a lot, but then I'm thinking, would it be constitutional?
Oh, because let's go there, actually. If it's going to be controversial and possibly not constitutional, that's the one I need to hear.
Finding a way to not have young girls fall pregnant so young. So I don't know, because how do we even regulate that, because it robs them of their future in many ways. So for me, that would be the main one. You know, so because it's sad, because it's the communities where we would want our young girls to thrive the most, where they're the most impoverished, where it's mostly affected. But that would be it's a wish more than it is a law that I could enforce.
Is there something you're doing towards that end?
So I am part of an MPO. I am a director for an MPO. It's called Keep the Dream. So it basically helps young girls. Also, it's basically young people in the community in Limpopo, as well as women of all ages become entrepreneurs. They make beads. So different things. So I've been around I've been around that NPO for a while, and I've seen what it's done. There's doctors that have come out of there.
Oh, beautiful.
They're lawyers. There's different professions, engineers that have come out of there. So it's quite amazing to watch, to see what you can do in a community when young people have somebody to guide them and just make them believe that they can be something.
Yeah, I love the idea of Keep a Dream. You know, I think it was 2 years ago, if not a year ago, I went to the high school that my sister attended way back when. And after I'd done the talk, I made them huddle around, like really, you know, be next to each other so that they can keep themselves and each other accountable. And I made them chant, "We as Aurora girls are going to fight for that dream." Because the truth is, nobody is going to fight for it.
Nobody's going to save you.
No, especially you. Especially when you're coming from an environment or society where the things that aren't normal are normalized. We're sitting outside after school and smoking is a thing. We're falling pregnant is a thing. Drug abuse is a thing. You have to fight for that girl. You have to fight for that dream. There's just no other way.
And it's important for young girls to realize no one is coming to save you.
No one.
Because people always think it's a man, it's a somebody is coming to save you. And I think people realize that too late. No one is coming to save you in this life. You have to fight for your dream, like you said, and you have to save yourself.
Yeah. And the sad thing is, maybe the man does come, but they're not saving you. You are paying.
Yes, there's a price.
One way
to pay.
Or another.
Yeah.
Fast forward 10 years from now, what headlines about Eva or EMG attorneys makes you exhale and say, yes, that was the assignment?
I would love to create a legacy where young girls can look at EMG attorneys and also know that they can achieve the same goal on a global space. So I'm hoping that EMG attorneys will be global. That's the main goal, and I hope it can inspire a lot of people. That's the main aim of it. So 10 years to come, everybody should be saying, EMG attorneys, you know, that young woman had a dream, and I can do it too.
How long have you been running the firm now?
4 years.
what's the proudest moment? And I know you probably have a lot, right? But like when you look back, you're just like, girl, yes.
Can I be honest?
Sure.
It's starting.
Oh, that is big.
Yeah, starting. Because there's so many things that tell you that you can't.
Yeah.
But just knowing that I am stepping out and starting. I mean, it's easy to say there are milestones. Mm. There are celebrities that we've represented, right? And it's been in the news. Mm. Those things, but those are not the biggest milestones. Yeah. The biggest milestone is starting.
Starting.
Yeah, starting and going.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're about to get into year five and then year six. And they say, if your business makes it past year five, you know you've got something going. And I think the next thing you'll be most proud of is staying around. Because it's
staying
tough.
Around.
Yeah.
And having such an amazing team as well. Like, I'm so blessed.
Mm.
Yeah, everyone works hard and they keep me motivated. Yeah. We have such an open environment.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I want us to do a quick fire round of this or that before we close, okay?
Okay.
I'm just going to give you three this or that scenarios and then you tell me which one you would rather go for.
Okay.
Number one, pro bono case that keeps you up at night or a big ticket corporate litigation that funds the mission?
What mission does it fund?
Keep the dream, or whichever one. The business staying around for the next 20 years.
You see, now I have more questions. So
no, it's a quick, quick fire.
I have that.
Which one is that? So it is the last one. Big ticket corporate litigation.
I'll have the second one.
Got it. Okay. The second one is book that changed your mind or a mentor who changed your life?
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Uh-huh.
Mentor, who would that be? I have too many. My mom, my dad, my sister, my family, literally, they're mentors. Because they're all older than me and I learn from them. Okay, so let me put my dad.
Okay.
Let me put my dad.
Okay. Yeah. So the last question of this or that, would you rather win alone or build a table so crowded you have to add extension leaves?
Table.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. Oh, that's Eva. Listen, I've had so much fun talking to you. Tonight, you really proved that influence truly isn't just about the corner office or that robe we see you guys wear, but it's really about how you wield your knowledge like a key for everyone, you know, who's still locked out. And the fact that you're bringing these girls along and you're bringing these little boys along says so much about you. And if nothing, that will be the thing that endures forever. That impact you made, the words you spoke, the things they became or the people they became simply because you chose to dream and to live and walk out that dream. You know, as you were speaking, for me, it got clear that law is a language. You learn it and you can rewrite your future, literally. You also, as you were talking, made me realize that money is a servant. It does what you need it to do. You shouldn't be driven hither and thither by it. If you master it early, which is what you emphasized, you will find yourself never having to chase it forever. Exactly. And I think when we spoke about legacy, I think I really realized that it's governance of the unseen, the system we leave behind once the spotlight moves on. You've worked with celebrities, but you're just like, actually, the work that matters is the work on the ground, is the work with people who will never be known or possibly never known by everybody. But as long as they know themselves and they operate in that knowledge, that is all that matters. And so for that, thank you so much. Thank you for turning statutes into this beautiful story that we hear now, and the beautiful stories of the engineers and the doctors that are emerging from your journey. You know, you turn board agendas into blueprints, and these obstacles that bury a lot of people under, you have used them as an operating manual. You get up, you go. And for me, if there's anything that I took from this conversation, is get up and go, because nobody's coming to save you.
Nope.
Nobody's coming to save you. So thank you so much for humoring us. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your time. You were phenomenal.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where do people get a hold of your services, Miss Eva?
They can find me on Facebook, EMG Attorneys.
Yeah.
Right. They can also find us on LinkedIn, EMG Attorneys. Mm-hmm. We are very responsive.
Yeah.
So just Google or type EMG Attorneys Inc. All the details should pop up.
Yeah. You were amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers,
have a lovely evening.
You too. And with that, the Court of Public Purpose is now in recess. And we just got the precedent we needed. I would love it if you drafted the life you wanted. Argue for it relentlessly and never settle out of court with your dreams. Okay? Until next time, I am Bumike Mbonani, and I hope you've just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies. Next week, Monday. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.